between Hilchos Pesach and Hilchos Bishul, so on a few levels. So one, the question was asked yesterday when we were talking about Dalet Kosos and about whether there is a requirement of wine davka over grape juice, or is there a preference? So the question comes up, so what about Yayin Mevushel? So Yayin Mevushel, just to say very briefly, so the issue with Yayin Mevushel is that when you have wine that is cooked, so the understanding is that it changes the taste, that it's not as good as it would be otherwise. Again, I'm not somebody who can really tell you this firsthand, not a big wine expert, but apparently it's not on the same level. So this impacts halacha, because in terms of kashrus, in terms of stam yinam, so do we have to worry that an Oved Avodah Zarah would have used the wine for some type of libation if he handled it? So the halacha understands, at least the way most of Rishonim understand it, that because it's inferior wine, so therefore it's not going to be suspect that it would be used for libations for Avodah Zarah, because no self-respecting idolater is going to use cooked wine. So therefore you can be confident that it doesn't have any such risk that it was used for that purposes, for those purposes, so therefore it's not subject to the Isser of Stam Yeinim. So there is a concern, some of the Rishonim brought up, that doesn't exactly correlate to this halacha in Kashrus, but that also just emanates from the same idea that the wine is inferior, and that we have the same idea reflected in our practice, which parenthetically is an interesting idea to explore. Chazanish has a comment in one place about to what extent do you measure prohibitions of Avodah Zarah and requirements of Avodas Hashem as inverse or related ideas. To the same standard that is applied by Avodah Zarah should be applied as a mitzvah by Avodas Hashem and vice versa. Chazanish has a comment somewhere about the level of amunah that's required both to be over of Avodah Zarah and to be yotze, your kli of amunah. It's a chumra and kula at the same time. So the same way, you assume that Oved Avodah Zarah is not going to use this wine for his practices, so too we can't use it for the Mizbeach either. So then the question is there such a standard for a Kiddush and for Dalet Kosos, where you don't necessarily want to use it for the Mizbeach, but should you assume that the mitzvah requires such a standard, that the inferior wine that's being used, that exists in this Mevushel, so should it also have a problem for these mitzvot? So that's an issue some of the Rishonim considered. But it is paskined explicitly in Shulchan Aruch that Yayin Mevushel is acceptable for Kiddush and Dalet Kosos. Now, the Mishnah Berurah does say there that it's preferable to use not Mevushel wine, but the bottom line halacha is clear in the Shulchan Aruch that it is acceptable. So the question is, so why does the Mishnah Berurah say that it's preferable to try to use non-Mevushel wine? So presumably you could say that from at least two perspectives. One, you could say maybe because it's a Machlokas Rishonim, so it wants to be Choshesh to all the different Shitas, which parenthetically, by the way, is an interesting question. If you want to say that you're being Choshesh to different opinions, so then it's also relevant if we talk about Dalet Kosos and Kiddush. So what rules of Suffolk should you use if you want to consider it to be a matter of Suffolk because of a machlokas, if that's what's animating your concern? So what type of a Suffolk are we addressing? So presumably you're talking about mitzvahs to Rabbanon throughout. When you talk about Dalet Kosos, as we mentioned yesterday, it's clear it's a Rabbanon. And even when you talk about Kiddush, so Kiddush is a mitzvah d'oraisa, but according to the vast majority of Shitas Lahalacha, the mitzvah d'oraisa does not include the kos itself. And even if it does include the kos, the regular kos, there's many different Shitas. As I think I mentioned in the past, there probably at least, I saw one sefer that listed at least 15 different Shitas and poskim as to what the scope of Zachar, Siyom HaShabbos, Lekadsho is. And there are probably one or two that he didn't have, so it's probably more than 15. But it's very likely that there is no mitzvah d'oraisa to drink wine as part of Kiddush. So therefore, Dalet Kosos and presumably Kiddush as well the wine component of it is presumably a din d'rabbanan. So therefore, one probably has the right to assume if you view a machlokas as a suffix, it's always a little bit of a judgment question. When you have a machlokas, it doesn't automatically create a suffix. Sometimes you have the right to follow even the daraisa, you can follow the mikkel opinion if that's the position of the posek that you are following. It doesn't mean you have to always treat every machlokas as a suffix, but to whatever extent you're considered in a state of suffix because of machlokas. So presumably you have the right to assume here that this is a din d'rabbanan, which affects a lot of things. So for example, how big is a revius? Right, so there are different standards of what a revius is. The Wilkes position, as you can read about in the newly printed Haggadah, as Stefan can recommend for you. So there you brought down that a revius is 2.5 ounces.
I don't read that's a lot of money.
But you will before Pesach. You'll advocate for it. So he writes that a revius is 2.5 ounces. Others have bigger revius, or Moshe had a revius of 3.3 ounces. So presumably one has the right, again, although Talmidim Rabbah would have the right to follow the book anyway, but even if one wants to be choshesh to Sveikis, one wants to consider this to be a suffix. So again, presumably the issue at hand is an issue of a suffix d'rabbanan. But in any event, so the Mishnah Berurah might be saying that it's preferable to use Yayin Bushel because of the suffix, or you could be coming from a different angle, that if the whole issue here is that Yayin that's not mevushel is considered superior in terms of taste to Yayin that is mevushel. So Shulchan Aruch could be paskinig. Listen, bottom line, there's some kind of a threshold we'll have to measure at some point, and we'll say that Yayin that mevushel still meets the standard of acceptability for dalakosos, but that non-mevushel is superior in its quality, and since in general we want to go for the best possible wine for dalakosos, so that would give a certain edge to the non-mevushel wine. And indeed, the language, the Mishnah Berurah, when he paskins this, is that it's still preferable to use non-mevushel wine unless the mevushel wine is better. So presumably he's coming from that perspective, not just about being choshesh to views in Rishonim, but essentially what's trying to have the best wine. So what is the best wine? So if the wine that is mevushel is still, even after going through its bishul, is still considered to be superior to the wine that you have that is not mevushel, so then that'll be a priority for that wine. It's also related to a different discussion that we didn't talk about yesterday. We actually brought it up, as I remember, but the question of is a preference for red wine for the Seder. It's a discussion in general about two reasons when it comes to the Seder, the preference for red wine. But again, that is secondary to straight quality considerations, that if the white wine is preferable in quality to the red wine, then the white wine is still going to be considered more desirable. So in general, we have this quality preference that whatever is the best. So it's shayach that that's where the Mishnah Berurah is coming from. He's saying that mevushel as a standard of inferiority is not the best choice for dalakosos, considering that yes, it's acceptable, that's the psak of the Shulchan Aruch, but it's not the best choice because it's generally inferior. But if the metzias is that it's superior, the mevushel wine is better, so then that will get the edge. Hi.
So, don't the post we talk about today with grape juice and pasteurization that counts as
vegetable? Oh, so that's the whole discussion. But yes, the next point is, so what about pasteurization? So pasteurization seems to be a process of bishul, as, again, to synergize everything. So we mentioned this also in the context of bishul b'Shabbos compared to bishul b'Basar b'Cholov. Right, and we talked about the issue of whether there is a limitation in bishul acher bishul by basar b'chalav, and if that applies even if the components are cooked previously separately from each other, so then you would come to the conclusion, if you put all the parts together, that there is no possibility really in America of violating bishul basar b'chalav d'oraisa with, say, a cheeseburger or something like that, because the milk that we have is pasteurized, so it was all cooked already, so therefore it'll be subject to a hector of ein bishul acher bishul. Again, putting together a bunch of different shitas that you have to assume are true, which are not necessarily the case, but if all those positions are true, you could come to such a conclusion.
So then, let's say, so what if it's pasteurized? So does that have an impact on considering it automatically mevushel? But if you say that if the wine is pasteurized, so then maybe that's the case, so then whatever preference you have for non-mevushel wine will also mean that you're going to want non-pasteurized wine. Maybe.
Is wine normally pasteurized, or are we only talking about grape juices?
So I think wine depends on the practice of the various vineyards. That theoretically, I think the government's always going to prefer pasteurized food for health reasons, but I think that... I don't know exactly what the law is, and definitely some of the Pekiyim who are able to tell the difference would prefer not to, so what the law allows, you have to find out. But on the other side, against the Pekiyim, so Shlomo Zalman Orbach and the other poskim, not all other poskim, but some like Shlomo Zalman have maintained that pasteurization is not considered to be bishul for this purpose. That even though it is cooked at a very high temperature, but the way they do it, it comes out that it doesn't affect the change, and that supposedly other Bakim, one of the ones they just alluded to a second ago, can't even tell the difference, despite their ideas, between pasteurized wine and non-pasteurized wine. So then, to whatever extent, Mevushel is supposed to grant inferiority unto the wine, apparently there's a svara, like Rosh Hashanah Zalman says, that pasteurized wine should not be included in such a chisar. So that itself is really a perfect segue back into Bishul, except I want to interrupt it with one other point, because it raises the question, okay, so should you say that pasteurization equals Bishul? Is there one standard for Bishul b'Shabbos, Bishul b'Basar b'Chalav, and Bishul for Mevushel? So we can make an argument that there's a chiluk, perhaps, that when it comes to Yayin Mevushel, we're specifically interested in whether it creates an inferiority that would make it not ready for service of religion, whichever religion it is. Or maybe when it comes to Hilchos Bishul v'Shabbos, we're interested in other things in terms of what makes something Mevushel ready, which is essentially what we're in the middle of discussing. So there really is... It's not a joke. We really have a lot of synergy today between the Bishul Pesach issues and the Bishul Shabbos issues, and in a few minutes we'll see some synergy in the other direction as well. Just want to parenthetically, before we leave Dalakosos and back to Bishul, just want to mention another interesting point that comes out of the whole discussion, because it's one of these Kol Torah Kula Shas Yisodos, that in the context of Dalakosos, so there is a famous statement to the Ran, which you definitely know about, that the Ran and Daf Kuf Ches in Maseches Pesachim talks about the question of Heseba. That over there, the Gemara says that the question should be asked about whether the Dalakosos require Heseba. And the Gemara has two statements, both attributed to Rav Nachman. That the two opinions are yes and yes. The question is, which yes? Is it the first two, or is it the last two? So, what should we do, Lamaisa, if we don't know which one it is? It's unresolved in the Gemara whether it's the first two that need a Zeva or the last two that need a Zeva. So the Ran says, theoretically, since we don't know, so what could the policy maybe have been? That Safek Derabanan Lakula. Right? That's what you said a few minutes ago, that presumably we have Sefikas in Dalakosos, then that should be subject to a rule of Safek Derabanan Lakula.
But you said that when it's when there's different opinions, you can go by one opinion.
Right, it's the same Rav Nachman.
We're not sure about Rav Nachman's opinion itself.
Yeah, if you have a machlokus between Rav Moshe and Rav Willig, that's not necessarily a suffix for Talmidim of either one. But here, the Talmidim of Rav Nachman are going to follow Rav Nachman, the Talmidim of Rav Nachman are going to follow. We have two statements attributed essentially a suffix in the Gemara. So how should you relate to that suffix? So you could have said something Drabbanan Lakula. Dalakosos are for sure Drabbanan. Haseba is probably Drabbanan also. Haseba, there's what to talk about what exactly is the mucker for the Chiyu of Haseba. But in any event, talking about Haseba by what it's itself, a Din Drabbanan. So presumably we're clearly talking about Drabbanans. So you could have said, okay, something Drabbanan Lakula, so don't do Haseba by any of the Dalakosos. However, the Ran himself says that no, Maisi, you can't say that. Why? Because he has two svaras. One svara is easier, which we'll mentioned first, is that this is a subjective statement, but it says that it's not a big deal to just do a zeba for all of them. So, and when it's no tircha, we say sofik rabbanan lahachma. But besides that, he says that the issue is as follows: that what are you going to do? So sofik rabbanan lakula. So maybe that should mean that you should say don't do a zeba by any of the delicosis. So if so, that's going to result in totally negating the din. That the Gemara tells us there's a din of Hesebe by Delicosos, but because we don't know which one, so we'll say, all right, we have a suffix, we'll knock out the whole thing. So, says the Ran, you can't apply such a svara to say, okay, suffix to a bottom of the will mean that I'll perform a mitzvah in the most lenient fashion. But it can't mean that I'll wipe out a mitzvah, that the mitzvah will disappear because I have a suffix of where it applies. Parenthetically, just had a little more synergy in the end of the Yom. So this was, it's relevant to the upcoming Shemitah year, or the question of if this is an upcoming Shemitah year. That part of the whole Hetem Mechira debate back and forth. So the premise of the Hetem Mechira is that Shemitah is a Din D'Rabbanan Bizman Hazeh. Now Bizman Hazeh, you don't have Rav Yoshua Halel, that you don't have most of the Jews living in Israel. And contrary to what it sounds like, we're not on the border of that either, because not just you have to have most of the world's Jewish population, but the Gemara says you have to have them all living in their assigned chelek, so that's a bigger challenge. But in any event, so Shemitah, Bizman Hazeh, according to most Achronim, is Rabbanan. Not everyone agrees, but many assume that Shemitah is Rabbanan, and that's where the discussion of Hetem Mechira begins, on the assumption that it's Rabbanan. So there are those who wanted to go further and say there was a machlokas, the Rambam quotes the Gaon, there was a machlokas HaRishonim as to how to calculate the Shemitah. So maybe we could say that we don't really know what year is Shemitah. So maybe we could take things further and say essentially that no year is Shemitah, that we're dealing with a subject of Rabbanan, we don't know when it is. So maybe we should say we don't have to treat any year as Shemitah because of Safek Rabbanan Lakula. The Beis HaLevi, who's one of the major opponents of the Hetem Mechira, and the Beis HaLevi, and the Hetem Mechira does go back that far, even though the state of Israel was only since 1948, but the Hetem Mechira was started already 50 years before that. So the Beis HaLevi was one of the major opponents, as was his Rosh Yeshiva, the Netziv. They both, for their own reasons, objected to their own arguments. Objected to the Hetem Mechira, so basically we have the Tshuva where he says, don't get started with this whole idea of saying, okay, something to Rabbanan Lakula, we can say there's no Shemitah at all. And he explains why, if you want to use that svar, you'd have to go in the opposite direction, and you'd have to say that all the candidate years for Shemitah are Shemitah, and that would really be a huge chumrah.
If you hold that,
right, he explains why you can't say, even hold the Rabbanan, because you can't use the svar of something Lakula to say that you end up with nothing. I'm not sure if it's this, I'm not sure if it's that, so it's nothing. Something Lakula here, something Lakula there, and you have no year that, if we know 1 year is supposed to be Shemitah, right? And to say that, well, it's a Suffolk if it's this year, it's a Suffolk if it's that year, so I'll be Makel here, I'll be Makel there, I'll be Makel there, and I'll end up with nothing. So that's not an acceptable application of Suffolk to Rabbanan Lakula.
It's not like when we have Suffolk brachos, we don't make a bracha.
Right, because then that's one instance that we know that, okay, that concept of brachos exists, and we make brachos when we know we have to. And in this instance, I don't know if I have to make a bracha. But you don't have a case where you have a mitzvah, a halacha that exists, and because of sfeikus and application, we say the whole thing ceases to exist. So that would be true in either of these two cases. If we say that Shemitah we know exists, but we don't know when it is, so we'll pretend it never happened, so that's not acceptable. And so too, the Rana is saying here that the Gemara is telling us clearly there's a din of saving by the Delicosos. But we don't know which Kosos it applies to, so you can't say, okay, I'll just be Mako and skip it, because that will erase the din of saving by the Delicosos. And that's not an acceptable application of Safek Rabbanan Lahakim. So, okay, so fine. So let's not say it like that. So let's instead say that I'll pick one set to be made on. So that, the Ran says, you can't do either. Because That's just nonsense. I mean, it just doesn't make sense. It does no svara to do that. And if that's the case, so then since that's not a kula per se, and it's just illogical, so therefore that's not a plan either. So it ends up you have to be mashmer by both. You have to have the dalet posos in totality add sevo. So there is a lot of discussion, but that round, like we said, is a big kultur kula round. It's discussed in a lot of other contexts. This basic yisod that by a suffix of banu kula, if you have two equal possibilities, you'll have to be machmer on both. Mishnah Malach asks about why the Ran himself says differently in Hilchos Pur, that the Ran says if you have the city that you're not sure whether it was Mokefes Choma from days of Yoshua ben Nun, so there he says to read on Yudalot and don't read on Tesvav. And Mishnah Malach and others ask, why don't we say you should read on both days? So that's a whole discussion what exactly the difference is.
Could you say that?
Yeah, no, it's okay.
Could you say the difference is that there's a difference between Safek and Tzias and Safek on what the
din is? Yeah, there is a difference, whether it's a difference that makes a difference, whether it's a difference with a distinction, or a distinction with a difference. As the phrase goes, you have to figure out. But yes, the halacha does consider each issue on its own in terms of a Safek and Tzias and a Safek la halacha. And that is worthy of discussion. You may not necessarily answer this question. I think in general, and this just gets us all back to this original point, that one of the issues, and this could explain other issues of Suffolk, but it'll take us too far afield, but one of the general questions that comes up in Hilchos Fekis is, what question are you asking? Is the question on each individual thing, is this Mutter or Aser, or is this Tameh or Tahar, or whatever it is? Or is the issue, I have a chiyuv somewhere, I just don't know where it is. So if that's the issue, I have a chiyuv somewhere, so then there really isn't a kula or a chumra. There's no preference of one over the other, because they're all equally viable. While if the question is looking at something independently, is this okay or is it not okay, so then you have objective kula and chumra. So to give you an illustration, it's a little bit complicated. The Mishnah says in Taras, the Gemara in Masechet Pesachim on Daf Yud quotes the Mishnah from Taras, that let's say you have, there's a rule called Safek Tumah versus Arabim is Tar. Right, so let's say somebody comes to you, there's two paths. One path is Tameh and one path is Tar. And somebody comes to you and says, I took path A. So you're allowed to say Safek Tumah versus Arabim is Tar. And then, 5 minutes later, or the next day, somebody comes to you and says, I took path B. So you know that between the two of them, somebody went on the Tameh path. But nonetheless, it doesn't matter. You can still tell that guy he's tar also, because Safek Lekula. So even though you know they're both incompatible with each other, it can't be they're both tar. But the halacha is, the Safek is a rule of behavior, it's not a rule of reality necessarily. So the halacha is, you can be makel in each case. So that's true, despite the fact that you know that if you add them together, it's not going to work. However, if they come together, let's say they race, and they both show up at the end of the two paths, and the one who took the path less traveled says he was on path A, and the other guy says he was on path B, and so you know together one of them is Tameh. So the other thing is, you're not allowed to say they're both Tameh. So Tosfos over there in Pesachim, Tosfos says, well, that has to be a din rabbanan, that you can't say they're both tar, because the same logic that is okay with the contradiction still applies. If you're allowed to be makel to this guy, you're makel to that guy, even though you know that if you add them up, they're incompatible with each other. So the same logic can still apply, even if they come to you at the same time. Right? Still, okay. Still, you can say Safek Lekula by each one. So the fact that you can't, that must be a din derabanan. So you could take a different approach, and you could say that, no, maybe there is a fundamental difference. That maybe when each person comes and asks you, am I tar money or am I tar? So then you could say Safek Lekula, because the question is, all right, you as an individual, we have a cloud of Safek Lekula we can be making. But when they come at the same time, it's a different question. They're not asking each one, am I Tameh or am I Tar? They're asking, we know there was tumah on one of these roads. We don't know which one. So which one is it? So that's essentially, it's a either or kind of question. There's no kula. It's not a kula to say this guy is tumah and this guy is tar. So therefore we no longer have the ability to be makel that way. So anyway, so that might be a chiluk in general in terms of how the question is framed. So this, to revert back to what we were talking about yesterday in terms of our suffix about the dalakosos, so are the dalakosos viewed individually or are they viewed all as part of one set? In other words, you say that each kos, I have a suffix whether it should have haseba on it, or do you say, no, if there's a chid of haseba somewhere in the set, I just don't know where it goes. In which case, there really is no language of kula or chumra. So that could be relevant to the question we were asking yesterday. Is there a mitzvah to drink 4 cups of wine in Pesach night? It's a whole set. Or do you say no, that there's 4 individual mitzvahs to recite brachos alakos, and they have nothing to do with each other. The shtiyas hakos of benching has nothing to do with the kos of kiddush. They just happen to all be happening the same night, but there's no connection. So that question, this was pointed out in a slightly different way, by Rav Nachem de Goldberg in his shiurim that was published a few years ago, published his shiurim on Moadim. He makes this point in a similar context, that the whole question of how do you understand the dalakosos affects the question like that. Did we say that it's all one big set, and therefore the sekhas should be relevant to each other, or each one is viewed by itself? So, for example, Rav Akiva Eger has a tshuva where he talks about that dalakoso suffix, the ran, and applying it to other areas of halacha. And he mentions there a kasha from his father, I think, where he said that maybe you should say that there is a svara that you should do the last two. Because when it comes to the last two, you'll say that mimanoshach, that you hadn't done a seva by the first two. So you'll say, if the last two are the ones that are supposed to have the seva, then for sure I should do the seva. And if it's not, so then I'm chayiv in haseva anyway, because I didn't do the haseva for the first 2 kosos, so I'll be chayiv in it for the last 2 kosos. In other words, assuming that it's all one unit and that the chiyuv goes somewhere, so if not the first two, it should be in the last two. So that kind of logic only applies if you see the dalakosos as one unified set where it's possible for the behavior towards some of the kosos to affect or to excuse the behavior in other kosos. Anyway, so this is a big run. It comes up all the time in the halacha. One of the more interesting applications, Rabbi Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld has a tshuva about Shnayim Ivra V'Echad Targum, one of the hardest religious practices that we have. So, according to the Gemara, you only have to do Echad Targum, one Targum. So what is the Targum? So, it's a machlokus what the Targum is, and the Shulchan Aruch recommends you do Rashi and Umplus. It says the Yerei Shemayim will do both Rashi and Umplus. That comes down to 2 targums. Right? Shnayim Rikru and Shnayim Targum.
One of them is not even really a targum.
So the Shaila is, if you want to say one's a targum, it depends on what the purpose of the targum is. That seems to be what the Shaila is. That if the targum is a translation literally, so then Umplus is the ideal translation in terms of the assumption that it has an aspect of the Sinai in its translation. But if you believe that a targum is meant to explain things to you so you'll understand it better, so then maybe Rashi is a better choice. Interestingly, Rashi on the Gemara and Brachas and the Ches, where it talks about Shnayim Rikru V'Echad Targum, Rashi does not say targum kigon mi. But according to the Baitan of Shulchan Aruch already, Rashi is considered a candidate for targum. So why does Shulchan Aruch say that he recommends doing both? So it says, Rabbi Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld, he says, because of the Ran himself. Says that essentially it's a suffix what the purpose of the targum is. So it's a dinder abanan shnayim mikra, so we should be able to be makel. But that's what the Ran says, that if we have a suffix, we don't know between 2 possibilities, we don't know which one it is. So then there's no svar l'hakel, we have to be machmir for both. That's an interesting application. He said that's why Shulchan Aruch has the statement that you should do both Rashi and Umplus. Okay, anyway, so that's some of that. So just we'll spend a few minutes. I guess we'll still bridge this topic into tomorrow. But the topic we're up to in Bishul does also go right into Pesach and connects both thematically and specifically,
in terms of what we're talking about. That, let's say, in terms of different types of heating food for preparation purposes, such as cooking versus roasting versus baking. So how do they interact with each other? So the Mordechai quotes the Sefer Yireim that even if we say ain bishul after bishul, but there is bishul after something has been roasted or after something has been baked. That is presumably after these earlier forms of food preparation taking place, cooking after that is still considered to be significant. We don't consider it to be a redundant process like defined by bishul after bishul. And he has two rayas from Hilchos Pesach. And one raya is that the Korban Pesach. Korban Pesach has to be sli. It has to be roasted and not cooked. And we find that if it was roasted already, and then it was cooked afterwards, so then the cooking takes away its roasting status, makes it cooked. So apparently cooking on top of roasting is a significant difference. Similarly, when it comes to matzah, so the Gemara tells us that if matzah is cooked, so then it loses its status as baked pas, or to use the Yiddish expression, it becomes pasnish. So essentially, the issue is that apparently cooking on top of baking or cooking on top of roasting has a significant effect and therefore should not be viewed as redundant in the sense that cooking after cooking is. So there was some debate about how effective that rye from matzah is. So the Gemara, as the Rav Yah, objects against the Sefer Yireim, that the Gemara in Brachos explicitly says that the issue with cooking matzah is that it doesn't have the tam matzah anymore. It will change its taste. So it sounds like that's a detail in Hilchos Matzah, right? That matzah has to taste like matzah, and if you will cook it, it will no longer taste like matzah, so therefore that's the issue. So in other words, what's the, what you say for your aim doing, using this as a raya that there's a significance to cooking after baking, maybe that's only because matzah has this requirement of tam, and that'll get lost with the cooking. So this sheds a little bit more light on the whole question of what is considered to be the malacha of cooking, specifically in halacha. Because the Acharon go on to explain that even that statement of tam matzah doesn't necessarily have to mean that, oh, it's only because the taste is different and that's a Hilchos Pesach problem, that it's an isolated issue, but that that could teach us something about what happens that's relevant to Hilchos Bishul B'Shabbos. So there are essentially two different ways to understand this, the Egli Tal and the Taz. And the Egli Tal points out that there is a psul of matzah shira, that the change of taste puts it into a new halachic category, and therefore that's considered to be a halachic distinction that comes from the cooking. And that's why in Hilchos Bishul, if it has a status change, that should be considered a change.
But it shouldn't have to do with taste. So okay. A change of taste makes it
right, but the clue of taste shows that there was a halachic, shows that there is a status distinction.
But if there wasn't a change of taste, it wouldn't matter. It would still be halachically different, right?
Not necessarily, because what makes it matzah shira then? Right, it's not about ingredients in that case. Normally, it's about ingredients. Right? What's in it? So here, it's just the taste change that, in his view, does that.
So he does care about taste as far as halachic change.
Right, or that the taste represents the halachic. In the case of matzah, the taste represents the halachic change.
Okay.
And therefore, maybe if there's a halachic change, if there's a status change, so then that would be considered bishul on Shabbos too.
So if you went, let's say, from cooking to roasting,
mm-hmm.
ostensibly, I don't know, according to Rav Willig, he wouldn't mind that. That would be
that might be the case.
But that would change the taste.
It would change the taste, but it wouldn't matter. So that, just to finish the sentence, so the Taz, you'll come right back to your point. So the Taz focuses on the change of taste as a significant enhancement, and therefore, because of Lechas Machsheves, that should be acknowledged. That if you're adding a significant layer here, so then that should be acknowledged from Lechas Machsheves perspective. So those are two different ways to explain it, whether it's the taste. The Gemara talks about taste, so what does the taste factor in Hilchos Shabbos? So yes, maybe either because it creates a significant enhancement and therefore melechas machshavas, or because it's acknowledged halachically as changing the item, and therefore it would be different for that reason. So he writes that nafkamina of this would be toast and bread. And if you have bread that's already turned into bread, it's already been baked, and then you want to toast it, which is halachically the same thing as roasting, and it's cooks on the edges with fire, which we call roasting. So is that a bishul b'shabbos? So we thought that that would depend on these two studies, that it doesn't create a new entity, but it does have a significant taste improvement, so that should be totally on the taz and the eglital, which is an incredible idea. The idea that toasting might not be a melacha seems very surprising, but perhaps it would come to such a conclusion. Mentions a few other possible nafkaminas to this issue. For example, there is the statement of the Shulchan Aruch that even though the Shulchan Aruch doesn't allow roasting after cooking, but he does allow taking dry cooked food and putting it near the fire, and apparently isn't worried about roasting after cooking. So there, again, the explanation could be that that doesn't meet the standard of either of these two definitions of halachic cooking on Shabbos. It's not changing the food into something new, and it's not changing the taste of the food, so therefore that should be mutter. And he says that would also be true in general if you have food that was dried. Let's say you have, so for example, the tradition soups, you know, the soups that are dried out. So I remember actually, well, my sister really wants to be done on this question of whether the tradition soups are subject to Bishul Daraisa or Bishul Drabanan. I think the issue is the vegetables, as it always tends to be the issue. So, and the vegetables, I think, were not previously cooked. They're just frozen before they're cooked. So the other things inside that are cooked, but then frozen essentially afterwards, so dried out afterwards, so then the new cooking doesn't seem to meet either standard of what cooking is. Doesn't change the taste from what it would be otherwise, nor does it constitute an enhancement on the original level of cooking. So therefore, the normal rules of ein bishul after bishul should apply. I think it was your first.
In case where the Shulchan Aruch had you put it near the fire to recook, is there any implication that the food wouldn't come to Yom Saladis Bo, or even if it goes hotter than that?
If it's been cooked before,
right,
so then it's okay.
Even
you know, the food that has been cooked. When the Shulchan Aruch mentioned, I think, sometime last week, where he says, don't do that if it's going to come, when he's talking about food that needs to be, that's cold, you want
right.
to...
Totally
so there, right, that's where it's... But also, that's where it's an issue. We don't have any bishul after bishul to help you. We have something that would be subject to an iser bishul. When the issue is that bishul is possible, so then that includes a situation where you intend to move it away, but if you leave it there, it could get to Yad's lettuce bowl. But here we're talking about a situation where really you should be saying ein bishul achar bishul. But the question was, all right, ein bishul achar bishul, but still, isn't this roasting, which is not bishul, and therefore shouldn't we say roasting after cooking should be an issue? Rabbi Halach asked this question on the Shulchan Aruch. So to that, as Rabbi Willig points out, that no, because the definitions of bishul and roasting and the like that we've seen seem to be dependent on having one of these elements, that either it should be an enhancement or according to the Taz or a change in halachic status according to the Eglital, and neither of those are happening in this circumstance. Hi.
You mentioned tradition soups.
Yes.
So there are similar types of soups that you can add in the vegetables after. So all it is noodles, possibly.
Right.
So why would you mention that it might be derabanan? Why would it be anything?
Well, according to Rambam, maybe bishul achar bishul is also derabanan.
Yeah. do we pass from Bishop
Right, so it seems to me that we say in Bishul Acha Bishul across the board,
right.
But the possibility is that there are some Rishonim who say that it's Drabanan, so he's acknowledging the possibility that it might be Drabanan. So the question of whether it's Bishul Acha Bishul in the first place, you know, has to do
what
with
could
that.
We pass according to most how we generally pass them?
If everything there was previously cooked, it would seem to be that it should be. It should be mutter. But again, in the case of the soups that we have, I don't know if that's the case. You have to ascertain exactly. You have to ascertain exactly what's going in there, whether that is has been previously cooked. Some of it isn't necessarily previously cooked, and then you would have a straight out Bishul Daraisa issue. Okay, so we won't chazer every point, but just broad points of what we discussed today. So we talked about a lot of things. We talked about Yayin Mevushal and about whether that is qualified or disqualified or less than preferable for Dalet Kosos and Kiddush and some of the connected issues. And we just went back to the general Dalet Kosos issue for a few minutes by talking about the Ran statement about Sefer Drabanan Lekula and talking both about its implications for other areas of Halacha and also the whole Safek can say about nature of Dalet Kosos as one integrated unit or as four distinct obligations. And then we talked a little bit about Bishul on Shabbos, and then how it's affected by various rites from the Pesach, but the question of the interaction of different systems of food preparation by heat, i.e., cooking, heating, cooking, roasting, and baking, and whether one on top of the other is considered to be a new level of malacha or redundant in the sense of a Bishul after Bishul, and various understandings of that and how it affects them. Okay, so again, I think we have a general agenda for tomorrow. Anybody else have any other topics that they would like to see added into the mix for tomorrow, let me know. We'll try to squeeze it in. Otherwise, some mixture out of Parsha and Hilchos Pesach. All right, everyone should have a wonderful day. How are you going out for us?